Good morning or early afternoon. I'm glad you're here today. I'm going to be presenting to you today about the initial steps that we took in developing a community partnership with the university and why we did that. It was really the idea initially was to conduct a health needs assessment for a community and then to utilize those results to drive or plan our future in working with this community. Anyway, it's a Mississippi Delta community, which if any of you are familiar with the Mississippi Delta, it's very rural, very impoverished, and lots of those social determinants of health and underlying issues are driving the poor health. And so another thing about using the community-based research principles was it helped us to understand some of those underlying causes and what was really the driving component behind those. I have no financial relationships to disclose. So the main things I want to talk about today, one is just the five components that we utilize for this assessment. We feel like these are very generalizable to other communities and can be used as a model to do needs assessments, especially in rural communities. And then the second part is to describe strategies for successful community-university partnership. So the purpose of this study was to utilize the community-based research principles to conduct a health needs assessment. For those of you that aren't familiar with community-based research principles, just really briefly, the main reason to utilize these is because it establishes community engagement, and you get that engagement from the community, and you're able to understand the community better, what things may help or hinder your process or working with that community. And the ultimate goal was to identify needs, assets, existing resources, and organizations that could be used or could partner together to improve health, and then also to develop this partnership with the community and the university. We utilized the Proceed program planning model that initially guided our formative assessment and is now being used as we are planning future development, implementation, and evaluation. So to give you a brief history of the partnership, in 2012, discussions began amongst myself and community members based on really an invitation to come into the community to address health needs. This is a community where in 2000 there was a community organization that was formed to address economic development and just really to try to save the community on a lot of levels. But Within that organization, there wasn't anyone on that within that organization that knew how to address the health needs. And so this is really where the partnership comes into place, where the university has this health, exercise science, health promotion department that could come in, and we have resources that this community could use in order to really begin to look at these health issues. And then we decided, or, you know, knowing our program planning background, that really we need to understand what does this community need. And going to the people and asking them specifically, what is it that you need? And not coming in as white coat researchers and saying, oh, you need this program, excuse me, or you need this program that's been effective in this other community. And so we really wanted to hear from the voices of those community members. So the initial step was the formative needs assessment, which was the community health needs assessment. We utilized a mixed method study design, so we had both qualitative research or methods in terms of our focus groups and interviews, as well as some quantitative and objective measures. This also provided us with the ability to triangulate our data, so we were able to see that the results that we got in our qualitative interviews and focus groups matched that of the objective measures that we utilized to evaluate the environment on different levels. Then there were five components to this study. So our methodology included focus groups. We originally, I think actually it was on the next slide. So focus groups, key informant interviews, and then subsequently some informal meetings based on feedback I got from community members of people I might have left out or needed to talk to. We looked at the nutrition environment using the nutrition environment measure survey. We looked at the built environment using the RALA, which is the Rural Active Living Assessment. And then we also looked at different policies that were impacting health, both positively and negatively. So with our focus groups, we felt like our recruitment procedures were very effective in that it was able, it brought us people who were, one, interested in improving the health of the community, two, knowledgeable about the community, and three, were just very engaged and provided us really rich data. So the way that we recruited was there was two different community meetings. One was we advertised just a general, hey, we're having a meeting to talk about the health of the community and some potential, there's another organization that spoke as well, Excel by Five. It was something that we're trying to do that's focused on birth to age five. So we both talked about what we were doing. So that brought in a lot of people. We also I met with the Rotary Club, which was a really helpful, after the fact, realized that was really good because initially from the beginning it got businesses engaged, leaders in the community engaged, and those are still some of the main people who are involved with our planning and whatnot now. And then we utilized purpose of sampling. So this community is really small, and this is one of the pieces that's really good for rural communities in that we sat down with several leaders in the community and they gave us names of people to call. And so we were able to get teachers, pastors, doctors, janitors, housekeepers. I mean, it was very, ran the gamut in terms of our variety. Then after we did four focus groups, I ran a demographic analysis and looked at gaps. Who were we missing? Who do we still need to hear from? And after that, recruited based on those gaps. So in total, we had eight focus groups with 67 residents. With 4 to 12 people per group. They lasted 60 to 9 minutes. And then in the spring of 2013, we had two more focus groups with schools, with teachers and students, as we began to try to understand the needs of that group better. We did give refreshments at each focus group and $20 gift cards. Our interviews, our key informant interviews, we chose purposefully based on existing literature as well as input from community leaders. And one of the pieces about the input from community leaders that was really helpful was that they suggested people such as, like, the main one that comes to the top of my head is the county librarian. There's not a community center in this community, and so the library really acts as that community center, a lot of knowledge about the community, and that wasn't ever mentioned in any existing literature about who to include as your key informants. So that was helpful. And you can see there my list of key informants. And then, as I mentioned, also, as the study went on, people would say, well, have you talked to so-and-so? Have you talked to the health coach? Have you talked to the school nurse? And so these came about after the fact, and we have their information just as the informant interviews, their informal interviews. The RALA, there's a PDF available of the RALA. I guess I forgot to go in there and list that website. But it's available for free online. This tool was developed to look at the physical activity, friendliness, and walkability of rural communities. It's used for populations of 10,000 and under. And it's used to collect data on things like street segments. So what is the walkability of this street? Are there sidewalks? Are the sidewalks cracked? Are there street lights? It also looks at policies that could potentially affect physical activity and as well as town characteristics and programs. So there's three separate components of the RALA, and you can see at the bottom I have them listed out there. And we utilized all three components. You don't have to. It's depending on what your needs are. You may only use one. And this, when you access the information online, it comes with a code book or a book that teaches you how to learn to use the RALA. So another thing, just to speak on this, what we did was we used Google Maps to outline a one-mile radius around the town center. And then we strategically selected segments to assess because we wanted to know things like what's the walkability around the school, around the library, around the hospital. So we didn't randomly assign segments. We strategically did, and we looked at 35 different segments. The Nutrition Environment Measure Survey, this is another free online tool. It also comes with the training. It's 20 hours. But this tool we use to look at the quality of food available, so things like what's the quality of produce available at the grocery store? Is there produce available at the grocery store? Is there a grocery store? It also looks at restaurants, access to healthy items, as well as do restaurants promote healthy choices? So, you know, do they charge you more for splitting a plate, or do they charge you more for a salad, that type of thing? So it looks at both quantitative and qualitative information. We utilized the restaurant and the store NIMS. And in this community, there are a lot of convenience stores or gas stations that sell plate lunches and things like that. So we also looked at convenience stores and then the one grocery store. From a policy standpoint, we looked at joint use or shared use agreements. For those of you not familiar with this, this is just the idea that you have a policy in place to where, like, a school and a city have an agreement to where community members can utilize the high school track after school hours, or a church and a community have an agreement that you can utilize the church gym on Thursday nights from 6 to 8 or something. And this is really valuable in rural communities because a lot of times there aren't resources. There's not an abundance of resources. And so when you share resources, it's useful or can be more efficient. There's not a formal joint use agreement in the community. It's still something that we're working on, but it's a process. Complete streets policy, so looking at, is there any policy to protect all users of the road? So not just motorists, but bicyclists, walkers, pedestrians. And in this community in particular, it's very, farming is a huge industry, so a lot of times you'll have the huge tractors going 5 miles an hour down the road, taking up the whole lane, and that's not safe. And so what else could we do to potentially make those streets more safe for everyone? We looked at tobacco. At the time of the study, we did not have a comprehensive smoke-free air ordinance, and now we do. So that's something that came out of this, was identifying that, hey, there's not currently a smoke-free ordinance here. This is preventing us from getting certain grant funds, so we need to get on that. That was definitely a difficult thing to address, especially in rural Mississippi, but we did. The school physical activity policy assessment, we used to look at school physical activity, and then we also looked at housing and zoning. So our results did reveal what the residents thought were the most pressing health concerns, as well as social and environmental issues, existing assets and resources that we could use to improve health, and also it helped us to identify organizations. So there are currently different organizations in the community working in silos trying to do things, and so how can we come together and work together on this from a unified standpoint? We also were able to look at the results and understand the current picture of health and potentially steps to take to address those. And as I mentioned at the beginning, we're currently using these results to write grant proposals for funding to bring in money for programming. And we are also looking for, are also working on our long-term community plan. So we've got a community wellness committee that we are really trying to grow, I guess, to have more representation of various community groups, especially with the childhood and under five ages. So a little bit, I want to speak a little bit to the partnership. I conducted the community health needs assessment, and the way that we utilized the community throughout this or kept the engagement was that they assisted with the development of the interview guide. So when we were thinking about, what do we want to ask in these focus groups or interviews, we had community members there that were saying, hey, this is something that we need to know about. This is something that needs to be discussed. They also helped to recruit focus group participants and the key informants, which again, looking back, this study was 2 years ago, and I think about, the people who have been there since day one, and there's still people that I deal with or have interaction with on a regular basis. They participated in focus groups and interviews, and also our focus groups and interviews were transcribed, recorded and transcribed. So when I was going through to code them, I had other community members do the same. And so they went through the transcripts and were able to provide their insight on what some of those results were, what some of the things that were said. This proved to be very valuable because there were things that I read and, just kind of read right over and maybe didn't think anything else about. And then another community member read and was like, hey, this is something that has been a longstanding issue in the community and, we need to spend some more time addressing that. So that was really helpful. And then they also helped with focus group facilitation and our final reception and results presentation. I presented this on campus, our results, because we were trying to initiate interest amongst faculty members at the university. And then we also had a presentation in the community to tell the community back, hey, this is what we found. is this accurate? Do you have any thoughts? These are our intentions as we move forward. And so we had about 100 people come, which is really successful for a community of little, like not even 2,500. So that was exciting. So in terms of the partnership, the university provided the community valuable resources for conducting this needs assessment in terms of things like the ability to conduct focus groups and interviews and use things like the RALA and the NIMS to evaluate or assess the community. And I was kind of in the right place at the right time with this, but a foundation, there's a private donor who, this county is really famous for duck hunting, and he has a lot of land in the county, and they were really wanting to do something to address these health issues in this community. And so the president of their foundation had contacted the hospital, and they're like, you know, what can we do? What do you need? And they said, well, this graduate student actually just did this needs assessment. So we put together a grant proposal based on our results and submitted to this foundation and got successfully awarded funding to actually build the wellness center. So it's going to be on hospital property, and it will be operated by the hospital. So there's several things that this does. One, with our rural health clinic on site, we have a program we're starting or really rolling out right now with patient referral. So when we have patients at our clinic and they're presenting with weight issues or diabetes or you know, pre-diabetes, and they're referred to the wellness center, we can spend more time with them, helping them understand the disease process, you know, coming in and being a wellness center member, joining the facility, having access to health education and things of that nature. So now our big thing is, okay, well, now that we have this building, we need to, how do we grow? What do we do? And so our community members have been very involved with, you know, what programming needs to be created and what's going to be interesting to people and what's not, what do the youth want to see? So it's, you know, that's been helpful to have that committee. So the proposal was funded to build the wellness center, and another example of this partnership was myself and the hospital administrator wrote it. So again, that combination of community resources and academic resources. And through this facility, we've created the concept of Tallahatchie Wellness, which is where residents will have access to the fitness center, health promotion programs, group fitness, health coaching, you know, the personal training, and everything that a traditional wellness center would have. However, we're also really interested in the outreach in terms of youth programs, worksite wellness programs, and really trying to, like, even down to, like, recycling and trying to create recycling efforts and really trying to address health from a comprehensive approach. So this is a picture of part of Tallahatchie Wellness. We've had a 3-month wellness challenge that we've done. It's a weight loss challenge modeled after the Biggest Loser, but we also focus on all aspects of health. So we have like a diabetes prevention and management portion of this, heart disease, physical activity, nutrition, you know, all those things. But this is a picture we took on the day of a festival that we announced our winners. This is about half of our participants here. We had about 150 people, and we had some of them decided to run the 5K that morning, so that's the ones of us who ran the 5K. This is an example of the top corner there is one of our educational sessions. We had those once a week. There were 10 total, and you had to go to 6 to be eligible to win. We also had group fitness, so you can see some of the group fitness. This is a health fair we did for a local work site, and we're really trying to understand this work site's needs for their employees specifically. So we did a health fair to collect baseline biometric data on the employees. This is another picture from our wellness challenge. So we also had 3 cooking demonstrations as part of it to teach people about shopping on a budget and meal preparation and things like that. So future steps here. When I graduated, as part of the grant, I wanted to be the executive director, so that is my current position. However, we lost that formal connection with the university, and then my main advisor, who was very instrumental through this, built relationships with the community as well, left after that year too. So we had some challenges there that we're still dealing with, honestly, in terms of how to continue to grow this partnership and how to continue to engage the university. So we're currently working with both the main University of Mississippi campus in Oxford, as well as the medical school in Jackson, with their Office of Population Health, to partner, work together, and see how to make this continue. The things that we need from a hospital standpoint, just as some examples, the hospital doesn't have an IRB, so we need an IRB. We need access to a database. And so there are things that the community needs that the university provides, and then there's things that we provide for the university, such as a wealth of research opportunity and opportunity for students to come and work with us. We've had two master students work on the project, and we really want to grow that to where we have some of our practicum students, which our undergraduates have to go through a 200-hour practicum experience. So, you know, with exercise science students coming up and helping us with personal training or facilitating the wellness challenge, and also from a learning standpoint, being able to be involved with the real-world project. And so that's something else we're trying to continue to grow, is those internship and practicum opportunities. So the main strategies that, as a takeaway point for this, the identification of a faculty member or a student with an interest in the area of focus. So that's really important, because you have to have that person at the university who's going to just take this and run with it, and it's going to be something that they're really interested in. So a graduate student needing a dissertation topic or a thesis topic, or a faculty member who is interested in that community-based or community health work. And then second, on the flip side of that, you also need someone in the community who is gung-ho about the project, who wants to be involved, who's interested, who is dedicated. I think a lot of times what I've seen, even working with other communities, is we've tried to replicate this model a little bit, is that a lot of times there's not that person within the community that's kind of the spearhead cheerleader, and it's a researcher or university coming in and saying, we want to do this, and it kind of getting handed off to someone. And so that's really important, to have that person in the community, and having dedicated people from each side that are in frequent contact and communication, and being open and honest and transparent about the things that are going on, and building trust too is really important. But again, the challenges are that faculty leave. You know, we all know that's not something that is forever, and so trying to fill those shoes with other people is important and sometimes can be difficult. So the study was funded by the Community Foundation of Northwest Mississippi, as well as the James Kennedy Foundation, and the Kennedy Foundation is also who is funding our wellness center. So we are about probably, I don't know, 8 to 12 months out of our building, and so we're still being patient and trying to figure out how to grow and what to do, but we do feel like this model is replicable in terms of the steps we took to identify needs, as well as the community engagement in terms of the, like, helping pick focus group participants and helping us to transcribe the interviews and really look at the results. So, yeah, I forgot to do that, too.